Welcome to Side Hustle City, and thanks for joining us. Our goal is to help you connect to real people who found success turning their side hustle into a main hustle, and we hope you can too. I'm Adam Kaler. I'm joined by Kyle Stevie, my co-host. Let's get started. All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Side Hustle City podcast. Kyle Stevie joining remote from his iPhone. Kyle, say what's up.
What's up? I'm here.
He is here. So, Rick, Gerard, you are joining us today, and thanks for being on the show all the way from sunny California.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I don't know how it's sunny and warm finally for like the first, you know, we've been having Midwest weather here for God knows how long. It's been a crazy winter.
Oh, wow. And you're paying in prices. You need better weather.
Tell me about it. I didn't move out here to live in London, that's for sure.
Where did you move out there from?
I was born and raised here, and then I lived in Hawaii for about 10 years. And then I moved back to California. Once I got married, we had a kid, and you know, the grandparents were kind of pressuring us to get back to family, closer to family. And, you know, I think it was just time to move back to civilization.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Oh, that makes a whole lot of sense. Yeah, where everything is, and milk's not $7 or $8 a gallon or whatever it is in Hawaii.
Oh no, it's here. It's that expensive here too.
Oh my God, you need to come where they make the milk. We this is what we have here. Like, it's not very far, a couple hours away.
Well, you know, I figured there's a hack to that. I just don't drink milk.
Oh, there you go. You could do that too. So so I love lattes too much. So I have to, that's where I get my milk fix at. But let's talk a little bit about what you got going on. I mean, you were in Hawaii for a while, you're back in California, you're in Newport Beach, that whole area right there. But you're doing a lot of executive recruiting for years and years for startups, helping them make sure that they make the right moves when they hire. I mean, these are expensive hires, these are not cheap people. And a lot of the folks that listen to our podcast, they're kind of all across the board. Some of them, you know, here in Cincinnati, and they've got people that I know that got startups with hundreds of employees. They could be somebody who's just out here thinking, hey, I want to start a company someday. But I always tell people, you could have a B idea, but you need an A team.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah. You know, it's so... It's kind of funny. You know, I was fortunate enough to do a lot of work in the Silicon Valley for a lot of years. And one of the things that I realized was, you know, people get funded, and then, you know, startup founders and actually people that have been doing it for a long time, like, they really just don't even know how to interview. And so what ends up happening is people kind of conduct these really, I mean, kind of like industry, like, you know, best practice interviews that probably work really good for the large companies that can afford to make bad hires. But for startups, you can't.
No.
And so I kind of set on this mission, you know, some time ago that, like, I wanted to fix that. I wanted to make sure that like startup companies, it's so critical that every hire matter and they get the right person on the bus that that. You know, the way in which I can fix that is get people really, really good at interviewing. And when they're really good at interviewing, they can ensure that the person who joins is really going to be the person that's going to be most impactful to the organization. Mm-hmm. And to me, that ties to two things. One, you need people who align with the core values of the company, that are positioned properly for your size organization. They really want what it is that you want. And you know, for startups, you need people who are builders, you know, and that's kind of a unique kind of DNA. People who are builders tend to, like, want to go in and build stuff from scratch. They don't want to make things better or kind of just, you know, work on a widget, right? They want to do something impactful. And then secondarily, you know, it is important that people bring to the table transferable skills that can get them moving through and get them successful in the company. But what I found that most people do is they just focus on the skills and they ignore the other pieces. And so that's where we get into trouble.
Oh, man, Kyle, you know where this is leading. My favorite subject, MBTI. This is starting to kind of head into the. So I'm an ENTP, Rick.
Here we go.
And Kyle's an ENFP. And we work really well together, especially on this podcast. So ENFPs and ENTPs work well. How do you get – I'm telling you, we've been bringing this up on every one of these. I bring it up on every one of these. But does that play into anything? I mean, Enneagrams, MBTI, any of that stuff? I mean, do you look at that? So, of course, skills are what they are. You could give somebody have them sit down and do a test to see if they're a decent Java developer. But what do you look for? What are these other things that you're looking for? And do some of those tests kind of play into it?
No, not at all. So I think those tests and assessments in general are really helpful in how you're going to lead and communicate with people. But to make a determination on whether or not you hire somebody because they are in ENTF or like whatever their classification is, it's not accurate. You know, there's no data out there to show that's going to be an accurate criteria. The best that I've ever seen from Predictive Index and a bunch of these assessment companies is they can tell you who got hired. But beyond that, they don't know if it was a successful hire at all.
Are they just not collecting data on it? Or, I mean, do they – I don't know. Is there no feedback loop there?
I don't believe so, because when a person is hired using that criteria, like they're not feeding it back that we fired the person 6 months later. There's nobody capturing that data.
Interesting. So there's a software company right there.
Don't tell anybody.
Yeah, don't tell anybody. Start hiring for it. Okay,
that's what we're doing.
Yeah, there you go.
So it can get dangerous. I mean, definitely it can work. It's better than nothing. But I think what we try to drill down on is whether or not somebody operates under the same core values that your company operates under. That's independent of like somebody's personality profile. I feel like personality profiles are a little high, like too high level to make an accurate decision based on that. I prefer to be able to gather evidence to support whether or not somebody operates the way in which we need them to operate within the organization. And that helps you get past the assumptions, bias, and personal motives that most people make decisions based on,
Well, I used to tell people that I was detail oriented just because back in the day when I used to actually like apply for jobs and stuff, I'd say detail oriented just because every resume I used to work at Kinko's, like my first job out of college was at Kinko's downtown Cincinnati, work a second shift and I worked in the computer services. So I would do resumes all day for people. Right. It was like the worst.
Yeah.
All the fun work was taken up by the day people. So here I go with wedding invitations and resumes. Right. So I'm reading on every resume is detail oriented. You know, there's like certain things that everybody says. Later on, I realized I'm not that damn detail oriented. And then when I did my MBTI, it's like, yeah, you're like the least detail oriented personality type. You're all over the place. And I'm like, that's me. I should stop telling people that, right? That I'm this detail oriented type. No, I need detail oriented people around me and to support me and to remind me when I have something to do, because I will literally go off track and do something else like I am right now. So
100%. I am not detail oriented at all either. I'm the same way. I'm an entrepreneur, right? Like we're like wild stallions they got to keep in a corral, because otherwise we're just going to go chase shit. Right?
Exactly. Like, yeah. We're like telling our boss better. Ooh, you know what you guys should do? It's like, no, we've got this plan and we're going down this path and this is what we're doing. And the board agreed to do this. And you're like, no, but it's the wrong direction. We need to adjust. And they don't want to hear that. Like, we're just not meant to work in those companies, or we have to have different roles in those companies. And I fear that a lot of people do what I did. And they just go and they put on their resume what they think somebody wants to hear. They go into the interview, tell somebody what they want to hear, and they don't really even know themselves, honestly. Do you deal with that? Like, you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I see it all the time. And that's if you think about what an interview is, the purpose of an interview is to get to the truth of who that human is that you're talking to, right? And the truth is that most people, if you know, most interviews, the way they're conducted is you're feeding them answers and you're giving them the answers. And all they're doing is just kind of marketing them back to you, you know, just parroting them back to you, you know. So like your example, you saying you're detail oriented because that's what they wanted to hear. Anybody who's astute will do that in an interview, right? And then what's interesting is the interviewer will come out and say, oh, man, that person was great because, you know, they're detail oriented and, you know, they told me all the things I wanted to hear.
Yeah, that's
but they
exactly
never dig underneath the hood to figure out whether or not it's real.
That's right. And you don't know until you hire them. And it's kind of scary. And the next thing you know, the person's not very detail oriented.
That, by the way, is terrifying to me, like to hire them because, oh, you know what? I like them. Let's just give them a shot. Like that's such a dangerous attitude, right? It's kind of like, well, you meet somebody an hour later, you go, let's get married and just give it a shot. What do you think? You know, and hope that it works out.
There's TV shows
like that.
It's
not a good hiring strategy at all.
No, they film TV shows out in LA doing that same exact thing where let's just get married. Oh, yeah. We just met each other. You're hot. I'm hot. Let's go. Like that's pretty much it, right? So Kyle works in a very demanding industry, sales. So sales, fast pace, things have to get done really quickly. And Kyle, one of his jobs is training new salespeople. So Kyle,
yes,
are you feeling what he's saying right now, Kyle?
Yes, because I'm the one that gets the fruit of the interview labor. So I get the guys that, if they interview well, but you don't really get in depth in certain answers. I'm the one that gets to expose all their bullshit. And then it's like, okay, now I'm stuck with this guy for 6 months or whatever it is, trying to make my account run while I'm babysitting some knucklehead who can't show up on time or who can't follow directions very well. So yes, or on the other side, you know, we've actually got really good interviewers here. So I don't have any complaints on my end. We'll get guys that I'll look at for the first time and think, this dude is a chump. There's no way he's going to make it. And within 3 weeks, I'm like, holy shit, this guy's amazing. How do they find
me? So you get surprised on a good way sometimes.
Oh, yeah, completely. And it, like he was saying about core values, I mean, you can get, because, you know, the rubber meets the road really fast here. So it's not like you can get lost in a project for 2 weeks. Our stuff has to get done in 10 minutes. We've got an hour to get a carrier from the west side of Atlanta to the pickup. You know, we've got to go. So I get to see right away if these guys can hold up to what, you know, the expectations that have been created with DQL where you got to go. You can't, there's no pussyfooting around anything. There's no timidity. You got to be ready to rock.
And that seems a lot different than what Rick probably deals with on a regular basis, because Rick's in the, you know, the software world. And I'm interested too, Rick, like just the type of niche that you're in. Like, first of all, like you like working with entrepreneurs, you focused on the startup world and mainly really software is where it sounds like you kind of dug in. And now you've got this hiring OS, which like OS operating system kind of thing. It's kind of, it all plays together.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, what's interesting is, so I don't do as much search work, now as I was. So we developed a product that's called InterTrue. It's like a true interview, right? And the idea behind that is that kind of one of the things that happened as I was kind of doing a lot of executive search work is and with the realization that people don't know how to interview, is I started building into my searches a interviewing process, saying, okay, look at, we'll work together, but we need to run this interview process that I'm going to plug in. Here's how I build it. You guys are going to train and I'm going to teach you how to do it. And then you're going to successfully hire this person. And so it took me a while to get it right, but like it actually started to work. And then we started seeing like these really incredible results where we were getting, you know, we had a couple companies that were, they hired their executive and then they said, you know, can you teach the rest of our staff to use this? So we have one company that was actually they do caregivers and nurses, and they, you know, they were at like maybe 40 people, and we found them an executive, and then I think now they're over 400 people, pretty close to 500 people, and they hire all of their caregivers and nurses the same way. It's all based on core values first, skills second. And you know, I talked to the CEO maybe about I think it was back in November, December timeframe. He's like, we have not made a bad hire in 6 years.
Wow.
And we've got people that are coming through, like we're getting referrals. We don't have to do really any recruiting. We don't post jobs. We don't do any of that. And so it's pretty incredible how we were able to kind of turn that around. Kyle doing sales, actually, you know, I used to have a big challenge with salespeople because, you know, as you know, Kyle, they're mostly full of shit, right?
I will tell you this. This is a sad story, but it's a funny story. Actually, a guy came from California. The best sales guy I ever trained was a meth head. He was he was actually on heroin really bad. And he was so fucking good on the phone. Like, just could tell, he could sell anything to anyone. Because he spent his whole life lying about who he was and what he was doing behind the scenes. So he was such a good con artist that it was like, I was mad at him that he got, when he got fired, I was so pissed off at him, not because he was an addict, but because of the fact that he had so much skill that he was just wasting by not even trying to get better. So yeah, when the best person you've ever come across was a heroin addict, I would say there's a lot of bullshit involved with what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. But I, you know, so I guess, are you looking for more meth heads to hire?
No, I don't. I'd much rather have the guys that I know are going to do what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to do it. That you lose some of that natural salesmanship ability. Yeah. But at the same time, you can teach competent sales. You can't teach character.
You know, what's interesting is one of the best recruiters I ever trained was a fairly quiet person who was very, like, just a really great listener, but asked really good questions. And that person used to crush it for me. She was just very calm. Would ask really good directive questions, wouldn't talk very much, and like just hit the cover off the ball like month after month. Like, you know, so it's kind of interesting that, and that does not at all fit the typical mode of a salesperson, right?
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
No. My cousin's really good at sales. I'm like, he's pretty high up with Dell. And EMC2.
Okay.
And he is the kind of guy that when you go to talk to him, everything's kind of like over the top happy to see you. Like you're somebody who's important, you know, and it's, hey, how you doing? And like all that other, almost to the point where it's uncomfortable. And I'm on the opposite side of sales. I'm more of a, you know, I try to stick true to who I am inside. So yeah. I'm more direct. I'm less touchy feely. I mean, I think that it takes me longer to build relationships with customers because it's harder for them to like want to talk to me because I talk really slow and I can come across kind of serious too much. But the relationships that we forge are much more durable because they know that they can trust me and they know where I'm coming from.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, Rick, is any of this stuff, I mean, the fact that you've done this for so long, one of the things I like about what you're talking about with your software is that you've got all this experience. You're listening to Kyle. You're probably understanding everything he's saying. Like, you're getting it. You've probably dealt with people like this. You're able to take this knowledge, this stuff. I mean, even you kind of said, MBTI, I don't know about that. I've got my own system based on all this experience that I have. And you could turn that into a piece of software that the next person can build on, right? Like, it's not like these people, like, when your career is over, all that's gone. All that's gone. It's gone forever.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But
yeah.
You've built something to keep it going.
Yeah, you know, I think it took me a long time to do it. But one of those things that's like, I just realized a long time ago, I don't scale, right? So
that's right.
Well, how do I figure out a way in which I can scale? And and you know, for a long time, a lot of what we built out, there's some AI and machine learning components that haven't really been, you know, viable. And thank God, you know, GPT-4, yay, I'm on it.
I use it all the time.
Yeah, right. You know, now with a lot of the generative AI, like, a lot of the things that we want to do are available that make it a viable product. So, yeah.
Well, now that it's a thing and there's a model for it, it makes it a lot easier to spin up new products like this that you've had in your head and you haven't really been able to, like, get out there. It would take a lot of time and you'd kind of have to reinvent the wheel, but not anymore. I mean, there's so much opportunity now with AI and, you know, these large language models. And now they're saying you don't even need a large language model. You can have a smaller language model that's more defined for a particular thing, potentially, yeah, like for your industry, and take this stuff out of your head, put it into something, put it into, yeah, essentially an AI. Like, can we build another Rick inside of this software?
That's kind of the idea. I'd love to be able, I mean, I am a handsome man, so what can I say?
Look at you. I mean, you agree. You're doing MMA. You're staying in shape. You're living in Newport Beach. You got a software company. I mean, come on.
I'm hydrodynamic, you know.
There you go. I mean, you're Hawaii and LA combination. Like, look at this. You're taking the best of both worlds and putting it into one person.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you've got all this experience, and it's like now you're like, let's create this software. Let's focus on, and you're not even necessarily focused right now on tech companies. This is, it can be for anybody. Like you just mentioned, travel or nursing company, whatever, hospitals.
Actually, you know what? Our first customer, like, we're not building it for, you know, we've got one tech client. We just launched the product in November. We've got one company that's a tech company, but almost every other company, you know, we're working with a lot of, are you guys familiar with EOS at all?
No.
Mm-mm. Traction, Gino Wickman. So,
Traction. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we're actually working with a lot of EOS companies right now that are all over the board because, you know, they're core values based, and it's a very easy transition to be able to help them build their interview questions around their core values and then get them operational. And, you know, they're already used to systems, you know, companies who run an operating system. You know, if you can, you know, what we're doing is we're systematizing interviewing for them so that essentially anybody can plug in at any given stage, run the interview and be able to provide or produce accurate results.
Interesting. So it takes it out of their personal bias in a way.
Yep.
It takes that out of it. And puts it into the system, puts it into this, I mean, partially sounds like partial AI type of setup, and it runs them through a process that, it takes some of the bias out of it. That's great.
It takes a lot of the bias out of it. As a matter of fact, we don't even provide resumes to the interviewers because resumes bring bias. Because people go in, they look at a resume and they go, oh, well, I don't like that school that this person went to, or I don't like that. So they've already made a decision based off the resume as to what kind of interview is going to happen. And I just noticed that there's, you know, people go into an interview thinking, I'm going to really like this person, or they think, I'll talk to this person, but I'm probably going to screen them out. And so most people have two different types of interviews that happen.
Interesting.
Which is completely unfair. And it's actually not healthy for the company, because the company needs the best person to join, not the person you like the most.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if the University of Pittsburgh was on a resume, I know that Kyle Stevie would probably eliminate them immediately. Or, anything to do with Pittsburgh. Steeler fan, interest, Steeler fan, gone, out of the interview process.
Yeah, if their great grandma is within 200 miles of Pittsburgh, I'm not hiring them.
even if it was that the crackhead, I mean, I'm sorry, the meth guy who made you,
he probably came
a lot
from
of money.
Yeah, 100% came from Pittsburgh. That guy.
He was Long Beach. He was a California guy.
Okay.
He just settled in Indiana, which is just the weirdest place on earth to settle. Long Beach to Lawrenceburg, Indiana. It's just strange.
Yeah, that's a pretty different thing. Yeah, no, we love our Pittsburgh listeners. We don't hate you guys. We just want to beat you at football every weekend. So there's that. And but anyway, yeah, so getting back to the bias thing. So it's taking out the bias. It might take some of the liability out of interviewing as well. Because, I mean, you could potentially have some complaints there from people that say, hey, this guy didn't treat me fairly in the interview. This person, you know, obviously didn't like me for whatever reason going into this thing. I wonder why. Was it because my first name is this? Or is it because I went to this school? Or is it because whatever? There was bias there. And now I'm going to say something, and I'm going to get an attorney and screw you guys.
Yeah, that happens all the time, right? Like, so it does help to look at it. It doesn't happen for smaller companies very often. No. You know, usually the people that they target the big companies with the big pockets, right? Like that's, but you know, somebody feels like they were discriminated against, and, you know, we also record and transcribe all the content. We use it for training purposes. And also, you know, our AI is providing kind of recommendations back based on the actual evidence. So it's saying, hey, this person said this, dig deeper here on this question. So all the questions are predetermined, and basically there's sub questions below that help us get to the truth. But it's really easy to be able to defend that. No, you weren't discriminated against at all. I mean, we evaluated you for this core value, and you even said this is not you, right? So it makes it very, very easy, and you're making decisions that are based on fundamental principles as opposed to, you know, the color of somebody's skin or, you know, sex or whatever else.
Yeah, anything else that you can...
You know, I was thinking about this because Pence, the vice president, went to Hanover, and I was like, if I were to go job searching and I put on my resume that I went to Hanover, depending on who you're talking to, they're like, oh, well, I know that's where Mike Pence went. Mike Pence is an asshole, so I don't want any part of it. And he must be from one of these liberal arts school is very religious and conservative.
Yeah. Assumptions. People make assumptions based on that stuff all the time.
All the time. All the time. Yeah. And now it's not just about the software. I mean, you've got this startup company. You built this awesome thing that I think the more I hear about it now, the more I'm interested in it, because you know, you mentioned the one company who hasn't made a bad hire in 8 years. How much money has that saved you? Like, if you were going to quantify all this stuff we're talking about, hey, potential discrimination thing. Hey, that's going to take time away from my team. I'm going to have to pay lawyers. I'm going to have to do all this. Also, a bad hire cost you, I can't remember, there's some company out there that quantified it at one point. You may have it off the top of your head. But I'm thinking about, like, hey, what's the, you know, the cost of your software versus all these headaches?
Yeah. I mean, look at the cost. Nobody really knows. There's a bunch of formulas on the cost of a bad hire, right? But, you know, what happens if you lose one of your best people because of it, right? There's all different kinds, and productivity, right? Because you bring in a bad hire, everybody else's productivity goes down because they see that that person's not performing. And, you know, basically what you're doing is demonstrating that, hey, our bar is lower now, so you guys don't have to work as hard.
That's right.
There's so many repercussions to a bad hire. I do kind of believe that, you know, if you look at each hire, each person you bring into the company, especially in a sales role, right? They're worth $1 million to the company. Each salesperson should be bringing in $1 million a year, right? So if you bring in the wrong person, it's costing you $1 million.
Real good point.
And if you think of it that way, why would you want to bring in, like, why would you take that risk?
Oh, you wouldn't take that risk. Yeah. I mean, that's wild. And I hope that when people are listening to what you're saying right now, if they're thinking about doing a startup, or maybe they even have a startup, what you're hitting on are pain points. These are major pain points. You're swinging for the fences here, because this industry, I mean, what you're talking about, what we've talked about so far up to this point, every company deals with this stuff. It's expensive. Your team is everything, like we said before in the podcast. So guys, if you're listening to this, listening to Rick right now, he's come up with a solution that goes after a big problems, not just small little problems that, you know, you're going through your day and you're like, oh, I should do a startup that does this. These are big problems that if he hits on these and companies start realizing, hey, we haven't made a bad hire in 8 years. Hey, we haven't had anybody say that, you know, they were discriminated against in an interview. This is the type of stuff that people talk about. And at some point, when people are using your software, you don't have to do sales anymore, because your customers are going to become your salespeople.
Yeah, that's the idea. I mean, like, you know, if we can down hire sales and just have customer success, that would be great, right?
Yeah, that would be 100%. And then these people leave. I mean, you know, if I leave a hospital, I'm going to go to another hospital. I'm probably going to have a similar position. And if I was using your software to hire, if I'm in HR or whatever, I'm going to be like, hey, why aren't we using this other software here that I was using at this other hospital? Oh, what is that all about? Oh, man, they were killing it with this software. Let's use this. And then they start talking about it. So, I mean,
Well, here's the interesting thing. We built it for SMBs. We didn't build it for enterprises. And my mission personally is to help entrepreneurs and small business leaders be able to win, because in hiring, right? And the thing is that, you know, look, we lose a lot of times to bigger offers.
Yes.
And the reason why we lose to bigger offers is because you can't offer somebody, you know, a huge salary. But there's like the mindset has shifted in humans, especially like the younger generations, where they're more about what value am I getting out of the company as opposed to like how much you're going to pay me. And so as people come up through the ranks, if you can demonstrate to them that, hey, look at, we can help you grow your career. We can help you get to where you want to go by joining this company. And here's all the value we provide. Then you don't have to pay somebody a whole bunch of money to join the company. And that's been a side benefit that we've seen with a lot of our customers, because large companies aren't saying, hey, look at, here's how we're going to groom you, and here's what we're going to do for you. And, you know, we realize you have this problem right now, but if you join us, you'll be working on this, that, and the other thing, which is exactly what you told us you wanted to do. You know, if you go to Google, it's like, hey, get to work at Google. Good luck. We'll pay you a lot of money. Hopefully get in a good group.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you would know about that. You've probably placed people there or know people that have been in that company plenty of times.
I know a lot of people who have worked at Google. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've never placed anybody other there though. I've battled Google quite a few times for candidates, and I am a terrible loser. So I just, you know, I'm one of these people where like, if I'm up against another recruiter, I'm going to do everything I can to destroy them.
That sounds like you'd be great at MMA then, which is, you know, one of your side hobbies or whatever, where Kyle just, he falls over and just gets beat up. This is what it's. My impression of Kyle in a match is he's just like, all right, he does a little something and then he gives up about halfway through it. This is my impression of what, the way you explain your matches, Kyle, this is what it sounds like to me.
No, this is what it is. It's, I'll do like 8 weeks of really hard preparation I will work with the guy who owns the coach at the gym. We'll come up with a great game plan. I got enough connections that generally I'll know who I'm going up against. And then I will get on the mat and I will forget everything and I will pull guard and I will hold on tight for until the referee breaks it up because I'm stalling. And then I'll get my guard passed and I lose 3-0. It's pretty much every freaking fight. I get an adrenal dump. I'm just worthless.
Rick, I don't get the impression you've got that problem with all this competitive talk.
Well, I'm a guard puller too, because that's kind of my school, right? I train at AOJ. They pull guard, but like what they teach you to do is pull guard and then sweep real quickly. So, you know, so you're going in kind of safe and I told you guys earlier, like, you know, there's a bunch of killers there and I'm probably the worst, you know, I'm not the worst person my age, but I'm probably one of the worst black belts there, but you know, hey.
Hey, you're a black belt. You got there. Your competitiveness got you to that level. So you're
there. I told everybody when I got promoted, I was a diversity promotion.
There you go.
I needed an old guy to promote.
What'd you say, Kyle?
Like one of one of the few Americans there, I would assume, that is a black belt right now.
No, there's a lot of them. They produced a lot of black belts. Yeah. But there's definitely more Brazilians and, you know, definitely more people from, they have a big recruiting program and they go to Brazil a couple times a year and recruit people from Brazil and bring them over and make them world champions. Right. So,
jeez.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a tough flight. So, also, why don't you tell us a little bit about this book that you've got, this Healing Career Wounds. How did that come about? I mean, now you've got the software company, you're doing all this stuff, you're fighting people. Now you got this, and you decided to write a book on top of all this.
Yeah, I did this during COVID. Like, I got bored during COVID, so I'm like, I'll just write a book.
Yeah, a little bored. No, nobody to fight during COVID, so let me just write something.
Well, it went off the premise of I don't scale, right? So why don't I make it really easy for companies to plug in and actually build an interview process? So that's what HireOS is like the methodology that I built out, right? So essentially the book is I wanted it to be an easy read. I'm not a huge reader and I can't stand reading books that have a million stories about companies that have like, you know, Good to Great is a great book, but like, I don't care about Coca-Cola and how they went from 100 million to $1 billion. Cause I'm a startup.
Yeah.
I want to know how they got to a million. Right. So the idea behind the book is I wanted to create something you could read on a flight that is a playbook that you can plug into your business. And so I've got scripts in it. I have the whole process kind of laid out and how you run an effective interview practice. And, so like that was, you know, I did it during COVID, we released it in 2021 or 2020. Yeah. I think 2021.
Oh,
and, it's been doing pretty well. So
nice. You got through that pretty quick. Kyle just finished his book. How long did that take you, Kyle? That took you like a full year, didn't it?
For fucking ever. No, it took me, it took me about 20 months, but I was taking Nerd Talk and trying to translate it to Hillbilly, and it was way more difficult than I thought it was going to be. I'm not the greatest transcriber of things, I guess.
Kyle wrote a book on tokenization of assets, mostly real estate assets.
Nice.
So that's Kyle.
Yeah, you know what? I committed to like 3 months where I'd wake up at like 4:30 in the morning, open my laptop, read the last paragraph that I wrote and then just start writing. And so I just did like verbal vomit for about written vomit for an hour and a half to 2 hours every morning. And then the best thing I ever did was I hired a developmental editor and she helped me get everything together and structuralize it and make it really good.
I did none of that. I put we went to a yoga retreat in Bali. And love the music down there. My wife got a playlist.
Nice.
So I put that on and I drove into work at our office because I would get more work done there than I will at the house. But I was the same way. About 5 o'clock in the morning, I would go in, put my earphones in and then try to type up as much as I could. It was, I couldn't do word vomit. I had to do more like legal writing. It was when we were learning legal writing in law school, it was just like, okay, you got to take these big words and try to get them as close to one syllable as you can. And it was just, it was like a puzzle.
Yeah.
That's
yeah, I get that. I couldn't turn on the lights or anything. I just had to keep it all like, you know, cause I get purple squirrel mode, you know, something. So like if
you're an ENTP,
if too much is happening around me, I'm all over the place.
What's your MBTI? I'm curious.
My MBTI, what is MBTI?
Are you an ENTP or are you or what's your Enneagram? Did you take any of those tests?
I did DISC.
Oh, did you do DISC? Okay. What's your,
yeah, I've done DISC. I'm a high DI.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. You're the same as me. Yeah. We got problems.
I'm more I than I am D. I'm a ID, and then, you know, my SC are pretty low, but you know, I don't know. I don't really pay much attention to it.
I'm more or less a promoter. Like I'm the person who like hypes it up and puts things out there and gets things going, and not necessarily the guy who can like take it over the finish line. You know, that's just not my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the same way. So you're a high I then on DISC.
Yeah. Yeah. We got I just like the, I like to mess with ideas and theories and things like that, as opposed to, you know, sit there. I can't do that. I can't get up in the morning and just crank away for a certain amount of time. Like I want to get up and do something else like immediately. Like I'll do it for 10 minutes and then I got to get up and do something. It's tough. It's a struggle.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people out there like that. I mean, if you've got an entrepreneurial personality type, if you're listening, and you've got an entrepreneurial personality, just know that a lot of us are like that. A lot of us are very, like you said, squirrel, like, and you're like, oh, where, you know, and you're, there's always something else that you want to be doing and you think you can multitask and do several things at one time, but it can be a struggle, especially if you're trying to write a book.
100%.
So yeah, guys, well, this is awesome, man. So Rick, what, you know, you want to leave us with something, some way for people to like reach out to you, understand a little bit more about what you're doing, maybe get the book.
Yeah, absolutely. So, the book's on Amazon. It's on, you know, Kindle and everything else. It's called Healing Career Wounds. And, you know, the title's a little, you know, you think it's for, you know, a career seeker, but it's actually, the title's the punchline. If you really want to attract really strong people as a startup, if you can demonstrate that you can help heal a person's career wounds, you're going to attract really solid talent to your company because nobody else is doing it. And that's the competitive advantage that you have as a smaller organization. So if you can figure out what they want and what you offer satiates that, then it puts you in a point where like nothing can stop you from landing that person. I also have a podcast too. It's called Higher Power Radio. It's not a religious show. It's HIRE.
Okay, there you go.
And then of course our software platform is InterTru. It's InterTru.ai. We just launched in November. We've got a small bunch of companies. We're actually still working through our MVP and onboarding customers, but we've got a wait list that we're building out. If you're a small to medium sized business and, you know, values are important to you and hiring the right people is important to you, then reach out to us. We'd love to talk to you about, you know, when we're fully launched, getting you on the platform.
Love it, Rick. This has been awesome, man. I really appreciate it. And, I hope you get out there on the water sometime. If you're into that, you're in Newport Beach. So you're right there.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I actually traded in my surfboard for, Matt, and I'm starting to itch to get back in the water because yes. I'm spending too much time on the mat. So
well, we
I
don't
only
get...
have too much time and startup life is not, you know, not really conducive to free time right now.
No. Well, we don't get that at all. So we're even further away from being able to surf or get out on the water. So you get out there and do it for us.
I might as well be where you are.
Oh, you might be more productive here, honestly. Like it's just a good place to do stuff. So, but cool, man. I really appreciate it, Rick, man. Thanks for being on the show, sir.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, guys. It was great to meet you guys.
You too.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Side Hustle City. Well, you've heard from our guests. Now let's hear from you. Join our community on Facebook, Side Hustle City. It's a group where people share ideas, share their inspirational stories, and motivate each other to be successful and turn their side hustle into their main hustle. We'll see you there, and we'll see you next week on the show. Thank you.